So a lovely set of readings today, and I'd like to try to connect them. Paul, as usual, is having problems with the Corinthians. The Corinthians were Greeks, of course. And if you remember a couple weeks ago, Paul was complaining about people breaking into partisan groups. I'm for Cephas, I'm for Apollos, I'm for Paul, blah, blah, blah. Apollos was famous, he was a convert to this Jesus way. He was famous as a rhetorician and as a speaker and came with all kinds of rhetorical skill. And Paul got a little worried about that, and he's addressing that because the Greeks loved that stuff. It was the TV or the movies of the ancient Greek world, you know. You would go and hear somebody talk for a couple hours, and everybody would get all churned up and say, oh boy, that's terrific stuff, you know. What's the problem with that? Well, there is a very real danger that salvation becomes a matter of something that happens from the eyebrows up. The Greek word philosophy, of course, says it all. The love of wisdom. The Greeks were in love with wisdom. You know. So Deepak Chopra could have made a killing in ancient Corinth, I'm sure, as he does today. You know. The problem, again, is clear. You de-existentialize the gospel. You don't have to do anything, you just have to know everything. And knowing everything, you're safe, you're saved, literally. And that's why Paul makes the point, he said, I don't have any rhetorical skills. I'm not a very good speaker. Rather, I come to you as Christ came, emptying himself from all self-congratulatory or self-promoting impulses and being there solely for the other. Solely for the other. And that's more than what just goes on in one's head. That's played out in one's life. You know, we have a kind of modern version of this in the great objection that the Polish and the German popes made to liberation theology. Because one of the great impulses, one of the two pillars of liberation theology is orthopraxis, not just orthodoxy. Orthodoxy is the right opinions. Orthopraxis is the right behavior. And we have a long history of separating the two. And we still do to some extent, you know. That's why, again, Francis is just rising like a light into darkness for us. He does spend time with the poor. He does ride around in his little Ford Falcon. You know? He does live in a hotel. He does eat with everybody else who's at that hotel. And so what this is expressed, of course, in this wonderful passage from Isaiah. This could be juxtaposed with the wonderful 26th chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. And the wonderful thing about that text, of course, is that people were surprised. When did we see you in jail? When did we see you a stranger and take you in? In other words, what's going on is a total unself-conscious. They were not doing to score points with God, in other words. They were simply present in the world, not because they were following somebody's laws. You gotta do this, you gotta do... No, that's not the point at all. We simply, that's our spontaneous presence in the world. That's the kind of people we are. We're not self-promoting. We're not looking for grandeur. We're not even looking for acknowledgement. We are, as the gospel has it, simply in the world as a light. A A light does not draw attention to itself. It simply is there, illumining, lighting up. And that's why we who live in the shadow of Nelson Mandela, Pete Seeger, all those nameless heroines and heroes of our world, who do not act as some kind of self-promoting thing, but simply spontaneously. Freedom! That's the issue. Freedom, you see? They're free, and this is where we stand athwart the temporary understandings of freedom, where if I win the lottery, then by God I'll be free. I can walk into Masonville or wherever and put down $2,000 for a sweater and walk out grinning like a Cheshire cat. No, to be free means to be free from one's self-seeking impulses. To be free from that fundamental impulse to self-preservation. That and that alone is what Christian freedom means. And again, I can't say it often enough, you can't legislate that. You absolutely cannot legislate that. You cannot make that a rule. No? Pace all the Roman bureaucrats. You cannot make that a rule. It is rather part of this subtle transformation by grace. Paul Claudel, the great French poet, had a wonderful image for grace. He said, grace is like oil. And it seeps into cloth or paper. It just is there and permeates everything and transforms everything. It's a lovely image and a very accurate one. And this is what we're supposed to be gathering here to celebrate. You know, a passionate desire for that kind of transformation.